The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It is Sunday, March 15th. We are getting ready for the new league year to begin. It sounds as if it is going to start on time, March 18th at 4 p.m. Of course, the legal tampering window will open up at noon on Monday, March 16th. Teams have right now until 11:59:59 by the second to franchise tag people. And the players have approved a new CBA. The vote was confirmed on Sunday morning, and the deals were leaked, all that down. Because this is what you need to know, the information about the new CBA and how it will impact professional football. Former sports agent, CBS sports writer, good friend of the show, Joel Corey, at Corey Joel on Twitter. Joel, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, how you guys doing?
I'm doing well, man. We hadn't hung out in a while. It's been too long, but we get to chat with you about this new CBA. First of all, I'll ask you, were you surprised that the players approved the CBA?
No, I'm surprised the vote was that close, because roughly 60% of the players make league minimum or close to it. Everyone's going to vote more or less in their own self-interest, so I thought at least there'd be 55% approval, because the owners were smart to basically bribe the rank and file with increased minimum salaries, better benefits and stuff like that, since average career is a little over 3 years. I figured those guys were not going to care what the superstars thought to some degree, but apparently those guys' voices carried a little bit of weight since this thing narrowly passed.
Yeah, the final vote was 1,019 to 959. 79.1% of the players voted. Were you surprised that number was that low? I think 80% election turnout isn't that crazy, but it is voting online. It isn't like you're voting for the president or even in a local election. You're voting on, you know, whether or not the deal that's going to be used for your union. Did you think that number was high, low, just about right? What'd you think?
Low, because you would think that you don't have to go anywhere to vote and you can vote online. How hard is that going to take? That takes 5 minutes, presumably.
You can order toilet paper on Amazon or hand sanitizer on Amazon. You can't vote under CBA?
Yeah, I don't get it. I thought it would be closer to 90-95%. So I guess there's some union apathy there.
Yeah, maybe so. I know Tom Brady tweeted out, "Well done, D," to Demoris Smith after the head of the union tweeted out an open letter about the new CBA. A little surprising to see, hear from Allen Robinson. He says trash, freaking trash. Stephon Gilmore says 4 massages a week during the season, going to have to boost that up to 6. And, you just sort of saw varying reactions. Were you surprised to see a guy like Tom Brady come out and, speak so highly of the CBA?
No, not when you put it in the context that he's been undercutting the quarterback market since 2013. So he's on borrowed time. He's held off father time better than anyone else in NFL history. He's going to be 43 in August, so he wants labor peace, because he says he wants to play until he's at least 45. I'll believe it when I see it, because at some time, father time hits everyone. And for older quarterbacks, we've seen that it happens pretty rapidly. Peyton Manning was humming along and then played the Rams, never the same again. Brett Favre was an MVP candidate. That second year in Minnesota, it looked like he should have retired after the first year.
Yep. No, that's a fair point. And like if this had gone into obviously next season was going to be played anyway, but if there was a lockout, it could have cost Tom Brady maybe his final year or next to last year or something like that. Okay. So what's your takeaway from this, from the CBA? I mean, did the players get a bad deal, as many people are insinuating?
No, they got a bad deal in 2011. Much improved deal from this one, the 2011 one. But there were areas that I wanted to see improved. Namely, why are you doing a 10-year, or actually 11-year deal, because this thing runs through 2030.
Yep.
Why are you doing an 11-year deal? They're going to be changing economics. Presumably, at some point, people are going to be gambling on sports again. because there will be sporting events to gamble on, and there will be a new TV deal. So you're going to have changing economics within the length of the CBA. Most other collective bargaining agreements in other sports aren't this long. Players don't sign 10-year individual contracts. So there should have been some sort of mutual opt-out so things could be reassessed after a few years. That's my biggest issue. I don't necessarily buy the whole, well, if we don't sign this today, there'll be no more negotiations, because my experience negotiating sports contracts was what you turn down today, you could ultimately get back later tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I'm not in the room. I wasn't a part of the negotiation, so it's very easy for me to say that, being a backseat driver, so to speak. I don't know if everything was maximized for the 17th game. Obviously, as I said again, I wasn't in the room. But I would think that the percentage, if it eventually gets to 48.8, it stops at 48.8. You can't go up. So you get to 48.8 in 3 years. You're stuck there for the rest of the CBA.
Well, and
there should have been some sort of incremental increases after that, to me.
Yeah, so just so people understand, the 17-game season, and we've talked about this on previous podcasts, but the NFL can move the regular season to 17 games beginning in as early as 2021, which one would presume that they will do it as fast as they possibly can. They can add a 14-team playoff beginning, and that's going to start in 2020. There's no reason it wouldn't. And when you talk about the 48.8, what Joel means is the player revenue. So there's 100% of all revenue that is split between the players and the owners, and the players over the course of this deal, as you point up, are maxed out at 48.8. For those that don't know, the players used to be at 53%, and the owners just straight up walked them back into where they were, and now that's what makes that 2011 deal so incredible for the owners. I mean, it was in the all-time, I don't even know what to call it, but it's like just an absolute walk back of the union into a spot where the owners wanted it to be, and it set them up for a future deal, right?
Oh, yes, it did, because if you walk it back to a point where it's so bad that if you get it to another point, by comparison, it seems better, but because you got so much the last time and played such hardball, it really isn't where it should be, because it never should have been walked back to the point it was. But we know one thing, that the players were never going to survive a work stoppage. Last time, they couldn't even get to the point where the owners felt any economic pain by missing at least preseason games. So that's out of the question. You can't even bluff that there'd be a successful work stoppage. And if you've seen in other sports, billionaires always outlast millionaires, even though NBA players have been willing to go into the regular season to miss games. Their contract's fully guaranteed, so it's a different story than NFL players. But that wasn't even an option on the table. You couldn't even bluff that.
Right. I mean, look, you're talking about you're talking about basically 31 billionaires who, I mean, if they don't play football, it's problematic from increasing their wealth standpoint, but they can they could ride it out forever. If the NFL ceased to exist because players wouldn't play, owners would still be really wealthy. You could still deal with it.
So what you would have is you'd have all the guys who are in the AAF and the XFL as replacement players.
Yeah, exactly. They just do a season of replacement.
At some point, they would do that. At some point, they would try the replacement player stuff they tried in the 80s.
You mentioned the 17-game season, and I don't understand why the players didn't take a hard and fast stance on something big to get that 17-game season. Like, all right, look, we'll do 17 games. You raise the minimum salary where you talked about, and get rid of the franchise tag. And even the franchise tag.
You're never getting rid of the franchise tag.
Yeah, of course, but I'm just saying, like something.
You can't even get that thing modified for the most part. They changed the calculation from average top five salaries in the previous year to a convoluted version where it's a cap percentage average taken over a five-year period, which actually, on whole, is better for the players as long as the cap keeps going up. But ownership's never getting rid of the franchise tag. I don't know what concession players could make. We'll play 20 games. Maybe that would do it. But that's one thing that if you told the owners everything is non-negotiable until you get rid of the franchise tag, you would have a long work stoppage.
Really? You think so?
Oh, yeah, they're not getting rid of that thing, because that's a great way to control cost.
Sure.
Let's say you could ever have quarterbacks get on the open market because of no franchise tag. Kirk Cousins is a good, not great quarterback. he got a fully guaranteed contract.
Yeah.
Let's say Russell Wilson could have played out his contract and been a free agent this year. I mean, next year, as opposed to having a franchise tag looming over him. Or Dak Prescott right now on the open market. Man, those quarterbacks would have fully guaranteed contracts. Some would be at $45, $50 million per year.
Yeah, that's a good point. Other things to note about in terms of the deal that got done, game day rosters go from 46 to 48, practice squad 10 to 12, and relaxed drug policies. Do you think any of those things really benefit? I mean, obviously, you're going to get more active players. In theory, you're going to have more people employed. But the drug policy, I was a little surprised they didn't just get, like, at least get marijuana completely eradicated, right? I mean, like, just, like, let guys do what they want. It does feel like they can still be fined for it, so that's sort of a problematic thing.
Well, you can't be suspended for it anymore, and the testing window is a lot shorter. It used to – someone had a sense of humor because the testing window used to start on 420. Now it's the first 2 weeks of training camp, and the threshold for a positive test went up, like, five times. So – you have to be pretty stupid if you know you're going to get tested in a two-week window and you can't stop long enough to and you end up failing a test. That's kind of on you. But yeah. Still, it should be out altogether because as marijuana becomes legal across the country and more states, there's no need for it really to be in the policy. I've never understood why you can't have all 53 players on the roster active and why you've needed this active-inactive distinction.
Yeah.
Why not have everybody active? I've never understood that one, but hey, that's for a different day. And one thing, they've added one more guy who can come back to return from IR, so it's three instead of two. When I first started working in the industry on the player side, it was pre-salary cap. It was like 92. And you could be put on IR and come back after 4 weeks. I don't know why everyone can't come back after some period of time. Why do you have to choose three guys?
Yeah, it is a little weird. I don't get that either. The salary cap jumped up to $198.2 million in 2020. I was a little surprised. I mean, I guess it's a $10 million jump. I was a little surprised it went even more with the new CBA being agreed to. Do you think we'll see something like what we've seen the last few years, or is this going to, in terms of how it approaches over the full length of the CBA, or for those that remember from 2011, it was flat for the first couple of years. It looked like the players got a really bad deal because there was no big influx of cash and then it started spiking. Do you think this climbs $10 million a year moving forward for the length of the deal?
Yeah, well, it's going to go up by virtue of the fact that next year the percentage of revenues goes from 47 to 48.
Right.
But I think part of the reason it didn't go up as much this year, and it's like a 5.2, 5.3 increase, and it went up like six and some change last year, which was a lower percentage than in the past, is you have more benefits eating up the player's share of the revenue and the increased minimum salary. So that may have been part of the reason, because it had been tentatively set at $200 million a couple of weeks ago, because that was – assuming that there wouldn't be a new CBA, they put it at 200. So I was surprised it actually came in at 198.2. But I don't think you're going to see it being at like 198.7 with the increase from 11 to 12 in 2021, where it was basically flat just because you have the percentage going up to at least 48 next year.
Yeah, it was wild to see it like, I mean, that was a shocker early on, but it was like, they signed this new deal. We don't think it's that great. And then all of a sudden it just flattened out. But then, of course, the last 5 years, it's been a benefit, for those guys. Do you think that the cap not spiking? I mean, and teams are pretty good about hoarding cap space anyway these days, as opposed to, you know, like you just don't see teams getting in cap hell the way that they used to back in the, you know, late 2000s and early 2010s. Do you think we'll see how much do you think the salary cap and, you know, for lack of the corona factor, will impact spending in free agency? Do you think we'll see a robust free agent market this year?
Oh, yeah, you're always going to see a robust free agent market in the first couple of days because that's the first wave of free agency. That's always a seller's market. Then it turns to a buyer's market. And you're going to see some guys where you're going to scratch your head and go, how did he get that? And then you're going to see guys who don't get their money initially, and they better readjust their expectations sooner rather than later, or they're going to be in a little bit of trouble. But one thing that has helped in terms of not getting in the cap hell is you can carry over cap room from 1 year to the next, and that's going to continue. The spending minimum period used to be 4 years. It's going to be 3 years for most of the CBA. It's going to go 3, 3, and 4. But still, that's too long of a window. It really should be at most every other year or every year like in the NBA. Plus, if you can carry over cap room from 1 year to the next, it shouldn't be based on the league-wide cap. It should be based on your adjusted cap. Because the way it works right now, you can go cheap, cheap, cheap for 3 years, and then you can spend like a drunken sailor in year four, and you can hit the 89% minimum. So the minimum's going up to 90, but still.
Yeah.
I don't like the dynamics of how that works, and that didn't really change enough to my liking.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because like it also, you know, it just like if you're a free agent, it's all about timing. You know, like you need, I mean, you're going to probably have a suitor or whatever, but if you got like a couple of loosey-gooseys who need to spend their cash in a fourth year and you happen to be a free agent, then you're going to get paid. By the way, speaking of spending freely, it sounds like the Texans have brought back Bradley Roby on a 3-year, $36 million deal. So good for Bradley Roby, since he was sort of a cast-off before he ended up in Denver. You wrote an article. You got it's up on CBSSports.com, some contracts you would look for offensive players. Like, if you're Tom Brady, what are you thinking? What are you thinking you want Tom Brady to get in free agency?
Oh, what I'm asking for and what I'm getting are probably going to be two different things, particularly with Tom Brady given his age. But I'm trying to get $100 million over 3 years, since I want to play till I'm 45 and have the first 2 years fully guaranteed. Now, if I'm any team, I am not going to do a 3-year deal with Tom Brady, because I don't know when he's going to fall off of a cliff. So at most, a team should commit to 2 years for Tom Brady. And assuming he's trying to get money as opposed to undercut the market, and if Tampa's going all in on him, they've got a ton of cap room. They could probably pay him 65 over two or whatever, and it won't bother them at all.
Right.
He's not going to throw 30 interceptions next year as their quarterback from 2019 did, assuming he signs there.
One would certainly hope that he would not. What about Dak Prescott? Do you think Dak ends up on the franchise tag, and do you think he signs a deal before the year begins? And isn't it insane that it seems like the Cowboys are – it feels like they're just trying to get him at 35, like less than $35 million a year, which to me is just crazy.
Well, Dallas should have made him a priority this time last year and tried to get him done before Russell Wilson started moving the market. And then you had guys filling in under that, like four quarterbacks, Wentz, Jared Goff, Ben Roethlisberger, coming in under that. So since you didn't make him the priority when you should have, he goes out, has his best year statistically. I know they didn't make the playoffs, but whenever a player successfully incurs the risk of poor performance and injury, navigates that, whatever he was looking for last year during negotiations, that's obsolete, and you're going to have to pay a premium for that. Now, knowing that you're probably going to have to put a franchise tag on them, and the word is they'll go exclusive, that's going to be about $31.5 million. That's how it projects to you right now. And it's based off the average of the top five salaries at the end of the restricted free agent signing period, which will be April 17th. And by salaries, that's essentially cap number. There are a couple of exclusions, but it's basically the cap numbers of the top five guys. So knowing all of that, you're going to probably have to make him the highest paid player, because he's looked at it and he's like, okay, we have a running back who he's great, had 2 years left on his contract, held out, is a knucklehead, and you paid him. You didn't have to pay Jalen Smith, because you would have been a restricted free agent. Lyle Collins has been paid twice now. I do everything right. Why am I going to cut you any slack? Plus, the whole, particularly Emmitt Smith saying, Dak Prescott should take a discount when this guy was a holdout 1 year and missed two games.
Ridiculous.
That's really rich to me. And no other quarterback besides Tom Brady, maybe Drew Brees now that he's old, take discounts. But you're never going to take a discount on your first contract when you haven't made real NFL money. When Dak Prescott's made $4 million in 4 years, good luck with getting him to take a discount. Now, what I tell the Cowboys is you've got to make my guy the highest paid guy in every metric right now. That'd be over 110 in guarantees, basically $95 million fully guaranteed, and more than $35 million is the average. And it's not going to be your typical 6-7 year deal. Quarterbacks have been given up 4 new years. It's going to be 4 new years. If you can't do that right now, then you know what? franchise me, and we can wait and see if Patrick Mahomes gets done or Deshaun Watson. And if and when they get done, they're going to be more than Russell Wilson. And I know I'm not going to get more than Patrick Mahomes, but I'm going to get more than what you pay me now with a Mahomes deal in the market. If he's at 40, then I want 39. So he has all the leverage. Plus, he's probably not going to sign a franchise tender like Kirk Cousins. Most franchise players don't. And if he doesn't sign, he can't show up and participate in anything unless he signs this protection agreement, which franchise players rarely do. So you're not going to see him until July 15th, or when the deadline for long-term deals is. So, yeah, he's got all the leverage. So Dallas should just go ahead and capitulate to him now, because they're probably going to do it later anyway.
I'm with you. I've been saying it for weeks. Pay Dak and move on. Then you could potentially bring back maybe do a deal for Amari Cooper. Anything that stands out to you from the CBA that we didn't touch on that you think? To me, the gambling revenues, the way that they worded it.
That's why you do a short deal. That's why I need a short deal, because you don't know how that's going to be ultimately going to be factored into the equation. That's why going through 2030 is too long.
Yeah, like if you look at it, and I pointed this out, Jerry Jones can have a Super Bowl party at AT&T Stadium with a casino, once it's legal in Texas to gamble, at a sports book that he builds inside the stadium, and the players are only going to get 50% of the revenue from gambling on that, or maybe, you know, like throw a Masters party, because that's completely outside the scope of the NFL, because any gambling on the NFL would probably qualify. But like, there's just so many little loopholes, and people are like, oh, they're not going to do that. It's like, are you nuts? These guys will do anything they can to remove that money from the NFLPA's interest.
Oh, particularly Jerry, because Jerry, when he first bought the team, was at odds with the Leeds marketing, because he would sign his own sponsors to maximize revenue for the Cowboys.
He has his own clause in the CBA that says, like, Dallas Cowboys marketing is exempt from it.
Yeah, that all started because of what he was doing in the early 90s when he bought the team. So, yeah, particularly him. One thing that was interesting to me in the CBA is right now you're paid over a 17-week season. And the players are touting this as a benefit, but now you're getting paid over 34 weeks. If I'm a responsible person, not all NFL players are responsible for their money. I want my money paid over 17 weeks because I can invest it and make money off of it, as opposed to having the owners paid out over twice as the period, which is twice as long, and they can earn interest on it, as opposed to me. There's some players that, if necessary, you want them to get paid over a 52-week period. But now it's mandated at 34 weeks. I wouldn't call that a win for players, even though the union was touting that as something that they got.
All right. Anything else that I might have missed from the CBA? Have you read the full thing? I'm not the full thing.
I've read summaries. It's a 456 page document. I haven't read the full thing yet.
It's so boring.
Well, here's something that's also good that now. For postseason pay, it's going up, but it used to be if you got a bye during the first round, you didn't get paid. So you basically were practicing for free. At least you're going to get paid during that first week. And they've kind of revamped how the proven performance escalator works for in the fourth year. It used to just apply to third through seventh round picks. Now it's also going to apply to second round picks. The threshold to hit it goes up from a playtime standpoint from 35% to 55%. But there are two escalators where instead of just going to the lowest RFA tender, you could also, if you play enough, get elevated to the second RFA tender. And also the fifth-year options are going to change in how they work. They're not going to be based on where you're drafted. It used to be 1 through 10, 11 through 32, had their own different salaries. Now if you go to enough Pro Bowls, then your fifth-year salary will be the franchise tag.
Yep. Those are excellent points. All right. Follow Joel Corey on Twitter at Corey Joel. Thanks as always, buddy. Have a great rest of your weekend. Enjoy the start of free agency, and we'll talk to you soon, man.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better.
because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.